Mike Malevsky here with another one in the series of interviews with candidates who have contested races for the November election here in Alaska and in the Valley. I'm going to welcome Kathy Tilton. Welcome, Kathy.
Oh, thank you, Mike.
And what I'll do is just set the scene a little bit here and just explain to the listener and just to remind you, Kathy, what we're doing. We had a general theme that we found has been very useful, and that is, how do you work with others? And as background for that, we looked about and we saw that nationally and even here in Alaska, there seems to have developed a more than usual political polarization. And that's resulted in gridlock sometimes and decisions sometimes that are made by use of power that isn't always backed by a majority of citizens. So we have a series of five questions, and the first one begins with two parts. How do you, Kathy, view the present quality of state government, and what is your approach to working with others of different perspectives to ensure quality government?
Well, you know, I think that the quality of state government is generally good. Of course, I do have disagreements with people in other parties and sometimes even in my own party. However, I do think that many of the people, and probably, you know, all of the people in state government, have a desire to serve Alaskans. We just have different ideas on how to do it. And I think in terms of what we could do differently, there are some systematic and, you know, systemic things we could do to change to allow for greater representation. Maybe somehow, and I don't know the answer to how, but trying to encourage more younger people to become involved in the representation. So,
okay. Well, let's move on to a second aspect that we have before us, and that is, how would you describe ethics in government, and in particular, the money often connected to this issue? Basically, what we're asking is, what would you specifically do to ensure a good ethical atmosphere?
Yeah, you know, it is really unfortunate that there can be some bad people out there who cast shadows over the entire government. As I think everybody knows, in 2007, the legislature, it adopted some significant ethics reforms in response to the FBI raids and the arrests that occurred in 2006, which I think pretty much everybody is aware of. It was a good exercise to do those reforms, and the initial results were fruitful and kind of done in kind of a knee-jerk fashion, which didn't take into consideration some of the things that they did reform. They were kind of short-sighted with some unintended consequences, along the lines of, you know, the ethics laws got so tight that a legislative staffer couldn't even make a compassionate gift to another legislator or something like that. So there are a couple things that can be done to make or keep government ethical, and one of them is to elect ethical people and to ensure a free and vigorous press. Nothing keeps a person honest as transparency. I believe that. Being ethical isn't always about a set of rules, but it is a character trait, and the rules are there as a guideline. Government is always an integral to many aspects of life, and many interests are always going to be part of the influencing decisions in government. It happens with interest lines on both sides. But I think that an ethical person isn't going to be influenced by how much money is attached to an issue. I would hope not. I know that I would not be. The influence should be based on a decision which is best for their constituency and Alaska as a whole. I know that in my office, my staff is going to, should I be elected, my staff is going to know that the constituents are always those who come first, no matter what.
Well, would you support, for example, clean election laws? There are some states where candidates raise small amounts of money with petition gathering and have it matched with public funds, and different ways of restricting the money that tends to float campaigns.
Yeah. I've heard that concept of a clean election laws, and I think it's interesting, but I think that it's kind of proven to be a little bit unworkable. The message has to get out to the voters, and I think that, as far as unworkable, I think that in the state of Wisconsin is an example of where the what happens with the clean election is that there is a petition and then there is some funding by the government, and I think that some of the legislators are in these certain states are defunding that program. And unfortunately, running a campaign, as I know right now, it's media driven and it does cost money. I talk to the voters. I go door to door because I feel that I want to talk to, the people in my area. I want to hear them. I want to meet them. I'm there to represent them. So I do. I have gone door to door. I've probably done more doors than anybody in this valley. I shouldn't throw that out there. Somebody might want to, come back on that. But I think that's really important. But I do know that, we want to get as much information out to the people as we possibly can, and it costs. Unfortunately, it does cost money to do that. And there's also different means and ways by which people are, get the message. The younger people definitely with Facebook and the more internet, but some of the older generation are still into that, that hard copy paper. So they're just, so getting your message out and using all the mediums that you can, is for me what I've been trying to do. And, also recognizing that we're in a declining revenue situation in our state, and I'm not sure that the funding would be there to do something like the clean, the clean voting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on to question number 3. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
What are the most serious environmental problems you see needing to be addressed, and what do you see as a state role in finding a solution to those problems?
Oh, boy. Well, we don't really have so much of a timber industry right now, and, in mining, we know that it can be done in environmental ways that, for example, Yosa Belly has got an aggressive environmental reclamation program, and they work really hard to be a good neighbor. And I believe that in Pebble, the EPA has taken a positioning on that, and so it appears that that's no longer a viable project. I think that there are there are different environmental problems in different regions. I know that in the Fairbanks area, and even moving down into the Palmer area, I don't have any statistics on that, so I'm not positive on that. But there's some there's some clean air challenges with the wood stoves and things like that. And I know that DEC and EPA were involved in that. What can the state do? Our state's role is to adopt stringent regulation based on the best science and consistently enforce the regulation. I think that's something that we don't do well. I don't think that we enforce our regulations to the fullest extent that we could. I think that would behoove the state to do that.
Okay. Well, thank you. The next question is regarding healthcare. The state of Alaska has chosen to not participate in an expansion of Medicaid as offered by the federal government. What is your understanding of government's role to make sure every Alaskan has access to healthcare, along with such things as education about healthier living?
Right. I'm sorry. I just had to take a quick drink of water.
Okay.
As far as the public health and welfare, Article 7.4 of our Constitution does provide the legislature to take care of the public health and welfare. There are problems out there, and so if we think about expansion because there are people who aren't covered. I think that the thing that we need to consider is that it's not so much a matter of expansion as this, we need a complete overhaul of our system, because our system is inherent. It's broken, and that's why I believe that the governor created the task force that he has looking at it right now to see how we can provide that kind of care for those people who don't have that care, and to be able to, to provide that in a manner that we are supposed to be able to, be providing it for. If I'm for or against expansion, that would, I would need to hear from people who know a whole lot more about it than myself. At this particular time, the funds coming from the federal government are it was a percentage. It was 100% at one time, and then down to 90% and 80%. And I think that, at this particular point, when you're taking federal monies, you have a lot of strings attached to that, and we have to look at that, how it's worked in other states and what's happening here in our own state, and just make some real big reforms.
Okay. The last question, number five. Many observers suggest that the next few years will see a decline in revenue that will put increasing pressure on the state's budgets, especially the funding of education, as well as basic services such as transportation infrastructure and public safety. How do you see the legislature contributing to solutions for matching funding and needs?
Well, that's, I think that the observers might note that our revenue decline is here now.
Right.
We're already kind of working under that. I've spent the last few years working on the budget, and I know that it's not in the days where we can fund everything that's going on out there. There's a lot of great programs. There's a lot of wonderful things, but I think that, just like our own personal budgets, we can't spend more than we have. It doesn't work. So, the state has to work within the guidelines of our Constitution when they're building their budget, and that Constitution does limit the appropriations that are allowed. Specifically, Section 9.16 sets an appropriation limit of $2.5 billion adjusted for the population and inflation from the benchmark day of July 1, 1981. So, in that budget, we're required to put a minimum of one-third of that money into the capital and into loan appropriations. So there was other things in that section, but those are the overall requirements for the budget. We also have a section that establishes our budget reserve that allows for withdrawal and paybacks to cushion the fluctuation of that production, and the market pricing of our state's sold resources. But so we have to follow these guidelines that are already set forth for us in the Constitution. We're already in the declining revenues right now. So the thing that we really have to do with these limits is that we have to look at what we've already got going on, and we need to finish those projects and things that we have going on already, and we need to maintain what we already have. I know there's a lot of things that aren't being, where we are looking at delayed, I guess you can call it delayed maintenance of these items. And we need to look at, prioritizing those kinds of things and the things that we are required to provide under the Constitution, which are the things that are provided in education. I think that we just, and we need to overall consider what our needs are, from our wants. We're just not in that day where we can just, spending we need to take a look at things, and when we're looking at the budget overall, we have to, we have to take a look at it with a deep understanding of, what are we required to fund, and do deep dives into those budgets it's something that I did with the health and social services budget and would like to continue to do with all of the different, with all of the different agencies to look at those and to make long-term sustainable choices on those. And then I guess that's one of the reasons I think on my literature I say I'm a common sense conservative, because I am a conservative, but I want to use common sense when we're making those kinds of recommendations.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Kathy Tilton, for answering the five questions we provided. Do you have any last comments before we finish up?
I appreciate you, and I appreciate your time and having me here, and I appreciate all the listeners who are out there listening. House District 12 encompasses Peters Creek, Kootenai, the Butte, and a little bit of Fairview Loop, and I would love to be able to put the experiences that I have and the knowledge that I gain from going door-to-door talking to people to work for each one of the people that live in that area and for all of the people in the state of Alaska.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Kathy Tilton, who's running for position in the State House in Alaska and will be on the ballot in November. Have a good day.
Thank you.